And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is February 5th, 36th day of the year. Only 329 days remain till this year's over with. On AD 62, on this date, major earthquake in Pompeii in Italy. In 756, An Lushan, leader of revolt against the Tang Dynasty, declares himself emperor and establishes the state of Yan. 789, Idris I reaches Volubilis, founds the Idrisid dynasty, marking a secession of Morocco from the Abbasid Caliphate and founding the first Moroccan state. Doesn't say when he opened the first casino there. 1576, Henry Navarre adjures Catholicism at Tours and rejoins the Protestant forces in the French Wars of Religion. That's right, let's go kill somebody in the name of religion. Or as I used to say in Airborne, kill them all and let God sort them out. 1597, a group of early Japanese Christians are killed by the new government of Japan for being seen as a threat to Japanese society. 1649, Charles Stuart, the son of King Charles I, is declared King Charles II of England and Scotland by the Scottish Parliament. 1778, South Carolina becomes the second state to ratify the Articles of Confederation. 1782, Spanish defeat the British and capture Menorca. 1783, in Calabria, a sequence of strong earthquakes begins. In 1807, HMS Benheim and the HMS Java disappear off the coast of Rodriguez. 1810, in the Peninsula War, the Siege of Cadiz begins. 1818, John Baptiste Bernadotte ascends the throne of Sweden and Norway. 1849, University of Wisconsin, Madison's first class meets at Madison Female Academy. 1852, the new Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia, one of the largest notice museums in the world, opens to the public. 1859, Alexandru Ion Cuza, Prince of Moldavia, is also elected as Prince of Wallachia. Joins the two principalities as a personal union called the United Principalities. It was an autonomous region within the Ottoman Empire, which ushered in the birth of the modern Romanian state. Wallachia, of course, is where you find Transylvania. 1862, Moldavia and Wallachia formally unite to create the Romanian United Principalities.
Motion detected at the front door.
1869, the largest alluvial gold nugget in history, called the Welcome Strangers, found in Mullyagu in Victoria in Australia. 1885, King Leopold I of Belgium establishes the Congo as a personal possession. 1905, in Mexico, the General Hospital of Mexico is inaugurated, started with four basic specialties. 1907, Belgian chemist Leo Baekeland announces the creation of Bakelite, the world's first synthetic plastic. They used to make a lot of plates and cups out of Bakelite. They gave away at grocery stores. In 1913, Greek military aviators Michael Boutsis and Aristides Moratinis performed the first naval air mission in history with a Farman MF-7 hydroplane. 1917, the current constitution of Mexico is adopted, establishes a federal republic with power separated into independent executive, legislative, and judicial branches, which, of course, was almost immediately ignored. 1917. The Congress of the U.S. passes the Immigration Act of 1917 over Woodrow Wilson's veto. 1918, Stephen Thompson shoots down a German airplane, the first aerial victory by the U.S. military. 1918, SS Tuscania is torpedoed off the coast of Ireland, the first ship carrying American troops to Europe to be torpedoed and sunk by the Germans. 1919, Charlie Chaplin, Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, and D.W. Griffin launch United Artists, which became a major movie producer. 1924, the Royal Greenwich Observatory begins broadcasting the hourly time signal known as the Greenwich Time Signal. 1933, mutiny on Royal Netherlands Navy warship HNLMS De Zeven Provincia off the coast of Sumatra, Dutch East Indies. 1939, General Maceo Francisco Franco becomes the 68th Caudillo de España, or leader of Spain. 1941, World War II, Allied forces begin the Battle of Corinne to capture Corinne and Eritrea. 1945, World War II, General Douglas MacArthur returns to Manila, as he promised he would. 1958, Gamal Abdel Nasser is nominated to be the first president of the United Arab Republic. He was a colonel at the time he became president. 1958, a hydrogen bomb known as the Tybee bomb is lost by the U.S. Air Force off the coast of Savannah, Georgia. It's never been found. It's probably sitting in somebody's living room, made up to look like a coffee table. 1962, French President Charles de Gaulle calls for Algeria to be granted independence. 1963, the European Court of Justice ruling in Van Gendt-Loos versus Nederlandse Administratie de Palestijnen establishes the principle of direct effect. One of the most important, if not the most important, decisions in the development of the European Union law. Now, direct effect is the principle that union law may, if appropriately framed, confer rights on individuals which the courts and member states are bound to recognize and enforce. Now, it's not explicitly stated in any of the European Union treaties, and it's been somewhat loosened in its application to treaty articles, and the European Court of Justice has expanded the principle, holding it's capable of applying to virtually all possible forms of legislation, the most important of which are regulations and, in certain circumstances, to directives. Okay, 1971, astronauts land on the moon in Apollo 14 mission. 1975, riots break out in Lima, Peru after police forces go on strike the day before. The uprising, known as the Lamazo, was bloodily suppressed by the military dictatorship. 1985, Ugo Vattari, then the mayor of Rome, and Chedley Klibi, then the mayor of Carthage, meet in Tunis to sign a treaty of friendship, officially ending the Third Punic War that lasted 2,131 years. 1988, Manuel Noriega, who was the strongman of Panama, is indicted on drug smuggling and money laundering charges. I knew his predecessor, Omar Torrijos. Interesting character. Noriega, as I remember, was one of his bodyguards. 1994, Byron Della Beckwith is convicted of the 1963 murder of civil rights leader Medgar Evers. 1994, Marcao massacres. More than 60 people are killed and over 200 wounded as a mortar shell explodes in a downtown marketplace in Sarajevo. 1997, The so-called Big Three banks in Switzerland announced the creation of a $71 million fund to aid Holocaust survivors and their families. About 50 years too late, folks. 2000, Russian forces massacred at least 60 civilians in the Novy Aldi suburb of Grozny in Chechnya. 2004, rebels from the Revolutionary Artabonite Resistance Front captured the city of Gonaves. Started in 2004, Haiti Rebellion. 2008, major tornado outbreak across southern U.S. kills 57. 2019, Pope Francis becomes the first pope in history to visit and perform papal mass in the Arabian Peninsula during his visit to Abu Dhabi. And in 2020, U.S. President Donald Trump is acquitted by the United States Senate in his first impeachment trial. You want to talk about a kangaroo court? A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day, Adelaide of Village, Agatha of Sicily, Avitus of Vienna, Bertuf or Bertul of Renti, Ingenuus, Roger Williams, Anne Hutchinson, Episcopal Church of the U.S., 26 Martyrs of Japan and the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and Anglican Church in Japan. Mexico, it's Constitution Day. In Denmark, it's Crown Princess Mary's birthday. And I didn't get an invitation. Pakistan, Kashmir Solidarity Day. San Marino, it's Liberation Day. In Finland, Runeberg's birthday. In Burundi, Unity Day. All right, let's see what else we got. '816, Frankish Emperor Louis grants Archbishop Salzburg immunity. 1428, King Alfonso V of Aragon ordered Sicily's Jews to attend conversion sermons. 1488, Roman Catholic German Emperor Maximilian I caught in Belgium. Apparently he was on the run. 1512, French troops under Gaston de Foix rescues Bologna or Bologna. 1556, Kings Henry I and Philip II signed the Treaty of Versailles. 1572. A beggar's assault Ustavik Nith and drive the nuns out. 1597. A group of early Japanese Christians, I refer to the 26 martyrs, are killed by the new government. All in the name of religion, of course. 1631, Rhode Island founder Roger Williams arrives in Boston from England. 1644, the first U.S. livestock branding law is passed by Connecticut. 1663, the Charlevoix earthquake in Quebec, which is also felt in New England. 1736, Methodist John and Charles Wesley arrive in Savannah, Georgia. And the neighborhood just went to hell after that. 1777, Georgia becomes the first U.S. state to abolish both the entail and the primogeniture. Primogeniture is the firstborn son inherits everything, no matter what's in the will. An entail means you can tie up the property for future descendants. 1782, the British garrison of Minorca surrenders to the French and Spanish fleet as part of the American Revolutionary War. 1782, that same year, the Spanish take Minorca, Western Mediterranean, away from the British. 1783, earthquakes ravage Calabria. 30,000 people die. 1783, Sweden recognizes U.S. independence. 1811. Prince George, the Prince of Wales, later George IV, is appointed as Prince Regent after his father, King George III, is...
Motion detected at the front door.
Recognized as being nuttier than fruitcake. 1817, the first U.S. gas company is incorporated in Baltimore. It was coal gas for the streetlights. 1825, Hannah Lord Montague of New York creates the first detachable shirt collar. 1831, Jean van Spaziek blows up his gunboat in Antwerp. About 30 people die. 1846, the Oregon Spectator is the first newspaper to be published on the West Coast. 1850, the adding machine employing depressible keys is patented in New Paltz, New York. 1861, the kinematoscope is patented by Coleman Sellers in Philadelphia. That was a very early... method of being able to show slides and pictures on the wall. 1861, Louisiana delegation except Mr. Bouligny withdraw from Congress. 1864, the Federals occupy Jackson, Mississippi. Been there. Don't know why they would want to have gone there. 1864, the Danish army begins its withdrawal from Dannevirke, the Dabbol, through driven snow. That's the last time the Danes would occupy Dannevirke, symbol of Danish identity. 1865, the Battle of Hatcher's Run in Virginia. 1870, the first motion picture shown to a theater audience is in Philadelphia. 1881, Phoenix, Arizona incorporates. 1885, news of the fall of Khartoum reaches London.
Motion detected at the front door.
1894, a female suffrage organization in Amsterdam is formed. 1897, Marcel Proust meets Jean Lorraine in a pistol duel. Nothing I've got shows who won. 1897, the first showing of a motion picture in Hawaii at the Hawaiian Opera House. 1900, British troops under General Buller occupy Valcarce and Natal. 1900, the U.S. and the U.K. sign a treaty regarding the Panama Canal. 1901, a loop-de-loop centrifugal roller coaster is patented by Ed Prescott. 1901, Pierpont Morgan forms U.S. Steel Corporation. 1904, the American occupation of Cuba ends, except for one small section. 1916, Enrico Caruso records O Solo Mio for the Victor Talking Machine Company. He was an operatic tenor, for those that are not familiar with the name. 1917, the last American troops commanded by General John Pershing leave Mexico. President Carranza will be assassinated the next year. John Pershing was brought here to Fort Bliss. In fact, the Pershing House is quite well known. He commanded the expedition into Mexico chasing Pancho Villa. What very few people know is he and Villa were good friends. When Pershing's family, which was at the Presidio in San Francisco, were killed in a fire, one of the first people to show up to give his condolences was Villa. Now, nobody understood what Pershing was doing here. He was so senior. He did not command Fort Bliss at any time. In fact, he outranked most of the commanders. And a gentleman I talked to when I first came to this area, who was very, very old. He lied about his army, his age, and went in the army at 14. He became Pershing's valet. In those days, generals still had valets. And he said in the evening, Villa would come down from the hills with his senior troops, and they'd play cards until dawn. And then they'd go back up into the hills, and chase would start again. The whole thing was a put-up job to let us test new equipment in Mexico. Well, that is the end of our history session for today. We've been talking about haunted hospitals. And one of the ones we were talking about yesterday was Waverly Hills Sanitarium, which is in Kentucky. In fact, it's in Louisville. It's a massive building. And it sits on top of a big hill. So, of course, during the winter, when it snowed, getting supplies up there could be a nightmare. And for the staff, getting to the bottom of the hill was also a cold operation. So to solve the problem, they built a 500-foot-long tunnel from the hospital to the base of the hill. One side of the tunnel had stairs so people could go up and down. The other side was a slope slide where you'd put carts and rail cars, things that had wheels. In time, the facility began using the tunnel to transport human bodies without anybody seeing them. Urban legend says the tunnel found its purpose when the hospital death rate peaked. According to stories, there was somebody dying at the facility every hour. Now, the real rate was a little lower than that. They averaged about 100 or 104 deaths per year. Peaked at 152 a year around the end of the Second World War. Now, a lot of folks attribute the unnerving feeling they get within the tunnel to the passage of so many freshly deceased. Others say it's primarily claustrophobia and echoes. Whatever may be the cause, people have reported disturbing shadows, the sounds of footsteps and voices that can't be explained that are heard echoing within the tunnel's walls. Now, maybe one of the most spectacular occurrences in the body chute, or death tunnel as it's called, happened to Brian and Justin of the Johnsdale Paranormal Group. Now, they spent a lot of time in the tunnel conducting EVP session using an infrared camera to take photographs in the darkness of the tunnel. And while they were standing midway between the top and the bottom, Justin spotted something down near the bottom, a glowing ball of purplish light. First, it just hovered in place, but when they turned on the infrared camera, which eliminated any external light, the ball of light began to change. It started to undulate, and its shape altered. Using the regular camera, Brian started taking pictures, one after the other, in rapid succession. If you look at the photos in sequence, it appears the large, dark purple blob is moving quickly up the tunnel toward the investigators before it disappears. So, you got to ask yourself, what was that? Was it a shadow or something else? Did it go past them? Did it go through them, into them? Well, we may never have the answer to that, but those photographs certainly make you wonder. The first floor of Waverly Hills contains some patient and treatment rooms, but its primary purpose was to contain the various things required to maintain a hospital, a morgue, a salon, a dentist office, administrative offices, and of course you got to have a gift shop. And it's undergone extensive renovation and restoration by the current owners of the hospital, and first floor also maintains the security office. Apparently, trespassers are a continual problem for the facility. You know, the first floor is not a hotbed of paranormal activity the way some other floors appear to be. But compared to most anywhere else in the world, the first floor is still pretty haunted. In fact, Joss, a Waverly Hills tour guide, told a paranormal society that there had been a high number of EVPs reported being heard on the first floor. Now, an EVP is when sound recorded on electronic devices are interpreted as being the voices of ghosts. And the voices are frequently not heard by the people who record them at the time. Often, only when the recording is played back are the EVPs discovered. In one first floor treatment room, Josh reported a visitor asking, "Is anybody here?" And of course, they didn't hear any response. When they played back the tape of the session, they heard a voice respond clearly, "Well, why are you here?" Now, the second floor of Waverly Hills is not discussed a great deal. Might initially lead you to believe it's not a very active location in the property, but according to Josh, the tour guide, who by the very nature of his job spends a lot of time all over the hospital, says he's had more paranormal things happen to him in the second floor cafeteria than in any other room in the building. Now, one of Waverly Hills' distinguishing features is the fact that it has a solarium. Fresh air and sunlight were believed to be some of the best ways to treat tuberculosis, so Waverly Hills Sanatorium was built so the entire length of one side is a solarium. And while the hospital was operational, that side had a copper mesh over its windows in an effort to keep critters out, but still remained open to the Kentucky wind and sunshine. So every day, patients would be wheeled out of their rooms into the solarium to take advantage of what was considered these healing elements. Now, there's a lot of wonders in Waverly Hills, in part due to this solarium, so tour guides and visitors to the hospital frequently ask spirits to tap on a window to demonstrate that they're there. One time in the second floor cafeteria, the spirits were asked to tap a window to say hello. On that occasion, something or someone tapped on every single window in the room, moving all the way along one direction. Then it stopped and it tapped again all the way back in the direction it had come from. So you have to ask yourself, was this a coincidence or a spirit trying to make a point? Then we have the third floor, which is inhabited by the spirit of a small child said to be named Timmy. Now, people have taken to calling him Timmy, and though there's been no verification that any child named Timothy was ever a patient at Waverly Hills, perhaps one name is as good as another when you're talking about ghosts. Estimates of his age range between 4 to 7, but one thing everybody seems to agree on, he's a mischievous rapscallion. Now, his voice has been reportedly caught on EVP, and there are those who believe they've captured an image in photographs as well. And the one thing that Timmy's most famous for is playing ball. Now, if Timmy was a patient at Waverly Hills, there's no question he would have spent most of his time in the children's ward in the rooftop playground on the fifth floor, but most people who played ball with him have done so on the third floor. Maybe now that he's unshackled from mortal life and free to run the entire hospital, he decides he likes the third floor best. That's really impossible to make that determination. There are dozens of videos on YouTube and paranormal investigation websites purportedly show investigators playing with Timmy. Balls of various size and materials roll around or tumble out of shadows down the hall toward a camera. Unfortunately, most of these videos are shot at night, so they're of questionable quality, with copious shadows and room for doubt. If a ball comes straight out of the darkness toward a camera, for example, how's the viewer to know there wasn't a human foot propelling it from the unseen end of the hall? Which is a very good question. And in many of the most dramatic videos, wind can be heard against the camera's microphone, so maybe it's merely a breeze, not a ghost child moving the ball. These are questions that really have to be discussed if you're trying to prove you're interacting with a ghost. Still, the belief by many that Timmy and his ball persist, and many people swear they've seen it move on flat surfaces in interior hallways when there is no wind. And it is nice to think if a child's spirit really is trapped at Waverly Hills, at least it has a lot of investigators stopping by to play with it. Now, Timmy's not the only ghost said to inhabit the third floor of Waverly Hills. Mary is a name that visitors are given to another child said to haunt the place. According to James Bright's website about Waverly Hills, Mary is often called Mary Lee or Mary Higgs, and most folks believe her to be the spirit of a young woman who died on the third floor. Now, Mary's most known for playing hide-and-seek with visitors at the hospital, and there's a lot of folks who believe her image was caught in a famous photograph taken in 2006. Photograph seems to show the image of a young woman standing in a doorway. Her form is transparent. Though you can see what looks like the outline of her body, hair, and face, it's not opaque. Parts of the wall behind her are clearly visible. So we have to ask, is this the photograph of a curious young lady checking to see what investigators are doing in her hallway, or is it merely a curious trick of light and shadows? There are most seem to be convinced that it is, in fact, the photograph of a curious young lady ghost seeing what folks are up to. And Mary and Timmy aren't the only two ghosts that wander the third floor. All hospitals see significant amounts of tragedy, but one assumes that usually stops when they close and stop functioning as hospitals. But that's not the case with Waverly Hills. One of the most heartbreaking stories surrounding this facility is said to have happened in the 1990s, at least 9 years after it closed. This story revolves around a homeless man and his dog. Waverly Hills had a long period of neglect and was even intentionally damaged by one of its owners. Now, the property owner wanted to build on the site, but he couldn't because Waverly Hills was deemed to have historical importance. During his tenure as caretaker of the property, the owner didn't employ any security, effectively inviting vandals and destruction in the hope that if the building was damaged enough, it would no longer be protected as a historical site and he could knock it down and put up his condos. And as empty buildings are wont to do, the Hills became the center of a great many rumors, stories from epic vandalism to drug users and homeless people to satanic rituals. And it's during this period that the story of the homeless man and his dog began to make the rounds. While there are many sources for this story, the best one seems to be the one written by Benjamin Jeffries in Lost in the Darkness. According to legend, in the 1990s, a homeless man and his best friend, a white terrier, made Waverly Hills their home. The man and the dog were happy to have found himself somewhere safe and sheltered to live, and the new owners were content to let him stay in hopes it would discourage other trespassers who were destroying the historic building. Then one night, a group of curious trespassers discovered the man and his dog at the bottom of an elevator shaft. They were dead. Though it might be tempting to assume they merely stumbled into the shaft in the dark, psychics who visited the site say that's not how it happened. According to the psychics, the man and his best friend were both murdered, thrown down the elevator shaft, and left to die. Now, without more information, we can't really verify any details of the story, but Jeffrey says a group of juveniles eventually confessed that they actually killed the old man and his dog. Unfortunately, because of their ages at the time, all the details, including their names, were kept hidden. Many of those who visited Waverly Hills believe the ghost of the homeless man continues to haunt the property, maybe reluctant to give up the last home he and his dog ever had. People have reportedly captured EVPs of a dog barking or howling and heard the dog's collar jingle and even caught a glimpse of his owner, an older man wearing a big coat. The pair lurk in hallways and peer out of doorways at the interlopers. Now, the fourth floor of Waverly Hills is said to be the most haunted of all locations in the hospital, with the possible exception of the body chute. Fourth floor was home to the sickest patients during the hospital's time as a sanatorium, and innumerable drastic surgeries were performed on this floor, including removing up to 7 of the patient's ribs or collapsing a lung by inserting air into the area around it. So is it little wonder that the location of so much pain and suffering be home to more unexplained sounds, voices, shadow people, and apparitions than any place else in the hospital? Well, a lot of folks talk about shadow people, and one of those is called Big Black. And Big Black is possibly the world's largest shadow person, a mass of impenetrable darkness, so immense it fills the entire hallway. Imagine being in the hall of a gigantic abandoned hospital when suddenly a dark cloud approaches, swallows the light from your flashlight. Big Black's been seen in several locations on the fourth floor of Waverly Hills. In the words of one of the tour guides, a large black shadow just settles over the hallway. We call it Big Black, and if you see it, just go the other way. Well, what would happen if you didn't go the other way, though? Well, according to one visitor who publicly shared his experience and comments on Mark Ledford's P-Base Gallery of Waverly Hills, he claims to have encountered Big Black in the third floor operating room. Bill Norman recounted he felt something brush against his lower back, which then began to burn. When he lifted up his shirt, he discovered 6 long scratches that hadn't been there before. And even more disturbing, when he listened to his voice record, he found an EVP of someone or something telling him to leave. Now, at the time that recording was made, nobody in the room heard the voice. but the recorder picked it up very clearly. That sounds like something worth running from, at least in my humble opinion. And then we have the creature referred to as the creeper, sometimes called the crawler. It's kind of a big bad of the Waverly Hills Shadow People. Unlike most shadow people, the creeper doesn't quite take human form. It's most often spotted crawling along the walls and ceiling of the fourth and fifth floors. More often than not, people mistake the creeper for just another shadow in an empty building full of shadows. That is, until, in the words of Benjamin Jeffers, it stands up and reveals itself as a horrifying humanoid black mass that escapes by creeping up the walls. Well, based on the various descriptions, it's impossible not to imagine a creeper something more animal than human. It skitters along impossible surfaces, waiting to pounce, like some grotesque creature in a horror movie. In fact, though most of the shadow people at Waverly Hills, excluding Big Black, are reported to be neutral or benevolent forces, those encountering the creeper have described an aura of doom that surrounds it. It's a feeling of malevolence and menace that has to be experienced to be understood. Some people believe the creeper may have been a patient who underwent thoracoplasty. The medical procedure involves cutting out a patient's ribs. Patients who survived this treatment, there weren't many, lacked the bone structure to stand upright and spent the rest of their lives bent over at the waist. It's difficult to imagine that the spirit of a patient who had undergone such pain and suffering might remain in a twisted form trapped on the floor of the hospital where it happened. And if that truly is the creeper's origin, is it any wonder it would exude a dark, menacing aura? Personally, I'd go after the doctors that did it. Now, Big Black and the creeper aren't the only shadow people who inhabit the fourth floor, and certainly not the only ones on the property. Seems as though spotting shadow people meandering about the grounds and all the floors of the hospital is actually quite common. For the most part, they appear to be oblivious to their human visitors. According to one investigator, it's not like one or two. These people are everywhere in the building. They're like shadows that pass up and down the hallways, in and out of doorways, look out the windows. Just like somebody's there. They actually move and break the moonlight. Still, sometimes the shadow people do take notice of people trespassing on their property. Early one morning, it was about 4 a.m, a small tour group went up to the fourth floor of the Waverly Hills. As soon as they entered the floor, one of the group felt uneasy, and he smelled the overwhelming scent of roses, an odor that grew stronger and stronger with every step he took into the ward. While his friends went into an operating room, he kept his back pressed against the wall, his eyes focused on the solarium that spans the entire front of the building. Suddenly, as though out of nowhere, a dark, shadowy figure began to walk around in the solarium. The investigator dashed into the operating room to get his friends, but everyone assumed he was just seeing things. But they humored him and followed him and were giving him a hard time right up until they got back to the hall and they all saw that apparition in the solarium. The shadow stood at the end of the hall, exactly where the little tour group had been when they'd first entered the ward. The shadow and the tour group just stared at one another in silence for quite some time, and as though there was some signal nobody else was aware of, the shadow began to float down the hall toward them, its arms moving like a distorted power walk. Its darkness was so dense that it swallowed the light coming in from the doorways and the outdoors. It kept coming and coming. Finally, the brave little tour guide stepped toward the entity and the little group of visitors, stepped between the entity and the little group of visitors. He told the spirit that it didn't mean any harm or to leave if it gave a sign. The shadow was only 2 doors away from the little group when, as suddenly as it appeared, it vanished again. I suspect at that point in time, the tour group decided to indulge in the better part of valor, which is getting the hell out of Dodge. Tour guides at Waverly Halls have a lot of stories. They like to tell the story of two young would-be vandals. The pair allegedly broke into the hospital armed with an axe and some spray paint. They intended to leave their mark on the building, but apparently the ghosts that reside there had other plans. Security guard was alerted to the intruder's presence when he heard their screams and cries for help echoing through the empty halls. Well, they tracked down the source and found the two boys trapped on the fourth floor. One was trying to squeeze through a small window in the door to the staircase. The other was chopping at the door with an axe. When they saw the guard, they screamed, "They're all around us. The door is stuck. Get us out of here." Well, the security guard tried the door to let the trespassers out, and it opened out without any resistance whatsoever. Hadn't been locked at all, but the boys who intended the hospital harm hadn't been able to open it even with the aid of their axe. It had driven them to such desperation that they were trying to climb through windows and chop through the door with an axe. And what was it they claimed was all around them? Well, nobody knows except the boys, and they refused to talk. Still, given the reports about being surrounded by shadow people, one has to wonder if maybe that's what they saw. Maybe the ghost objected to the boys' intentions toward the hospital building and wanted to scare them away. It is something interesting to ponder. Now, the fifth floor of Waverly Hills is possibly the most surreal. In addition to containing rooms for patients, specifically those being treated for tuberculosis with sunlight, it also contains something else not often seen in a hospital. It was a swing set. Now, tuberculosis isn't selective about who it affects, so Waverly Hills was home to patients of all ages, including the very young. At the front door. In the book Lost in Darkness, Benjamin Jeffries reports on how the staff dealt with the Waverly Hills younger guest. In an attempt to provide him some relief from what they must have been an incredibly depressing place to grow up, even without taking the effects of tuberculosis into account, the staff set up a swing set on the rooftop. During the day, the kids were encouraged to play on it out in the sunlight and fresh air, both of which were thought to be effective treatments for tuberculosis. And certainly it must have provided a lift for their spirits as well as an improvement in their physical health. So maybe this explains the numerous childlike spirits that are said to inhabit the rooftop playground. Investigators and visitors reported hearing children giggling, snatches of nursery rhymes, and sounds of unseen children playing. Even the creak as the swings go back and forth. Well, but maybe the most notorious room at Waverly Hills Sanatorium is room 502. Allegedly, this is the room where a young nurse's body was found hung in 1928. There are at least three different stories about how her body got there, but all of them have to do with her being pregnant and out of wedlock. Now, nowadays, this happens all the time and is more or less accepted within North American society, at least most segments of it. In 1928, though, not so much. Legend says that the nurse hung herself either out of shame at her situation or because she knew her friends and family would ostracize her if they were to find out. Variations of this legend, though, become even more bloody and tragic. Some stories say the nurse first gave herself an abortion before she hung herself. Others claim the father of the child, a married doctor at the hospital, tried to abort the fetus, but actually botched the job, and she died on the operating table. According to that story, he then staged it to look like a suicide to protect his reputation, both personal and professional. Now, there are no official records discussing a suicide in that room, but even so, people believe an unearthly presence inhabits it. According to the Prairie Ghost website, visitors to the room frequently report feeling ill. Their symptoms range from slight nausea to violent, uncontrollable vomiting. People have also reported seeing a figure draped in white, shadow people moving across the windows and blocking light as they pass, and been reports of disembodied voices demanding that the visitors get out. Waverly Hills Sanatorium, urban legend and reality weave together so seamlessly it's difficult if not impossible to see where one ends and the other begins. The current owners offer tours of the building, both historical and paranormal, so while its legend continues to grow from the addition of new visitors' personal experiences at the location, so too do the number of skeptics who believe it to be just an eerie building with a sad history. So while it's impossible to prove many of the stories that surround Waverly Hills, it's It's equally impossible to disprove the belief that some that it's one of the most haunted locations in the world. Well, from Waverly Hills, let's go to Danvers State Hospital in Danvers, Massachusetts. Located on top of a hill in Danvers. What you need to know about Danvers, Massachusetts, though, is that it was, before it was called Danvers, this town went by another name, Salem. Yeah, that's Salem. Now, not only was this village where the Salem witch trials took place, but the judge who presided over the trials, John Hathorne, used to live on the hill where the hospital was later built. Besides its notorious location, the hospital in Danvers has an unnerving history of performing controversial and experimental procedures and a solid reputation for poor treatment of patients. This was also known as the birthplace of the lobotomy. Since the hospital closed in 1992, its legend has only grown. Stories abound about urban explorers and paranormal investigators feeling suddenly ill or being overcome with feelings of despair when they venture into certain parts of the building. Then there's the usual doors opening and closing on their own. Footsteps have been heard in the empty rooms and stairways, and full-body apparitions of former patients have been spotted wandering and screaming through the empty hallways. But the fact that it's the location of the Salem witch trials gives it a different dimension. Then in Waltham, we have the Metropolitan State Hospital. Once one of the largest modern-equipped facilities of its type in the state of Massachusetts, the Metropolitan State Hospital, which was for the mentally ill, closed its doors in 1992. Having fallen into disrepair while sitting vacant for many years, most of the buildings on the complex were demolished in 2009. The only two things remaining from the site's history are the abandoned and boarded-up Dr. William McLaughlin Administrative Building, which is a foreboding stately colonial revival building from 1927, and a cemetery maintained by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Originally opened in 1930, the nearly 500-acre property has been used for multiple purposes over the years, including a school for juvenile offenders, an operational farm, a haunted house to raise money for charity, and the site of a large apartment complex. The most likely source of the paranormal activity on this site, though, stems back to the torments experienced by the residents of the hospital, those who left their tortured spirits behind. There are also more than 350 patients who are buried in paupers' graves on the ground, nothing more than a stone to mark their religion and their number. One of the non-paranormal but dark stories about the hospital is known for its states that the hospital is known for its murderous act of a patient by the name of Melvin Wilson. Wilson murdered and dismembered a patient by the name of Anne Marie Davie with a hatchet, and he buried several pieces of her body in different locations on the sprawling hospital grounds. He allegedly kept seven of his victims' teeth as a kind of a souvenir, but they were discovered by employees at the hospital. Now, the incident was apparently brushed under the rug to a local senator, with nearly 2 years later led an investigation into allegations of negligence at the hospital that uncovered this travesty of justice. In the Encyclopedia of Haunted Places, Jeff Ballinger reports that while the hospital was still in operation, staff reported various different paranormal episodes, including the uncanny sight of strange, shadowy figures moving down hallways, entering and exiting rooms, and passing through the walls. Staff also reported hearing the shrill call of disembodied screams coming from locations where decades before electroshock therapy had been used on patients. The belief is the staff was hearing echoes of the angst and pain from patients who had long since passed away. Perhaps even more startling are reports of flashing lights from these same areas, flashes that are thought to be representative of the shock treatments that were used. Well, the New England Center for the Advancement of Paranormal Science, also known as ParaBoston, specializes in the research and investigation of claims of paranormal activity throughout the state of Massachusetts, well as East Central New England. ParaBoston wrote a detailed report about this location in an April 2013 article on its website.
Among the incidents documented at the hospital are voices heard to be engaged in conversation in rooms and hallways where there's nobody present. Workers being grabbed and touched by unseen hands while moving through the tunnels that link the various site buildings. And heavy doors slamming shut violently despite the absence of wind or open windows. In 2011, reports of a glowing blue woman were made by more than a dozen different residents. A woman was spotted near a sidewalk up the road from the main administration building by police actually investigated, searching for a woman described to be gardening beside the sidewalk. But despite many reports, no woman matching her description would ever be found. Maybe this ghost was the spirit of Anne-Marie DeVee, wandering about the ground, searching for the parts of her body that were buried by her murderer. Among the most disturbing of reported incidents to the Yale Metropolitan State Hospital are the ones made by those who feel as if they're being watched and are overcome by a flood of emotions while walking the beautiful and scenic grounds. Some report feeling physically ill, only to return to normal almost immediately when they leave the area. And while on the grounds, are consumed by feelings of neglect and rejection. An empathetic reaction maybe to the spirits that lingered on the grounds. A few even shared mental images that came to with these powerful emotions, describing horrific procedures and practices enacted upon the former patients by uncaring medical professionals. Well, from there, let's go to New Jersey. The Overlook Asylum for the Insane in Cedar Grove, New Jersey. Originally built to help relieve overcrowding at Greystone Park, the Essex County Hospital, more frequently called the Overbrook Asylum for the Insane, was built in 1872. Now, hospitals, by their very nature, are sites for a multitude of minor tragedies. In addition to those expected tragedies, in December of 1917, the heating and electrical plant for Overbrook failed, so there was no heat or light inside the hospital. A cold snap in the weeks that followed led to frostbite for 32 patients. 24 patients died from the cold by the time heat and power were properly restored. Now, the hospital was shut down in 2007, and remaining buildings were frequently patrolled by law enforcement in an effort to keep ghost hunters and urban explorers from invading its interior. Even so, photographs, videos, and stories of Overbrook abound on the internet. It's been visited with permission by several television crews who specialize in discovering and documenting paranormal activity. Visitors to the hospital and its grounds have reported seeing bizarrely distorted shadows, orbs, and disembodied voices. Chuck Palahniuk filmed the movie adaptation of his novel Choke at Overbrook Asylum, and claimed his one teamster wouldn't leave his truck after reportedly seeing a gray-haired woman in a white cap and uniform. Apparently, that figure would disappear midway down a hall or into a dead-end room. John Edmund shared some of the video he shot at Overbrook on YouTube. He's got footage of what he called the scariest four-legged freak wandering the abandoned halls of the empty asylum. In the video, Overbrook Insane Asylum, Essex County Hospital, scary sighting, it looks much like a person walking on all fours. So while we might hesitate to call it supernatural, it would admittedly be a discomforting thing to see if you weren't expecting to see it. And then becomes the question of, who is it? Others have claimed to see white masses that resemble people looking out the windows near unexplainable voices. It's been pointed out by skeptics in YouTube video, Essex County Overbrook Asylum, by user CNB23, that the large hospital so frequently broken into by vandals, ghost hunters, urban explorers, it's impossible to know if you're the only person inside. So are people witnessing ghosts or just other trespassers? That's a question that needs to be answered. Then in Morris Plains, New Jersey, we have the Greystone Park Psychiatric Hospital. It's a mammoth building. In fact, it had the largest footprint of any single building in the U.S. right after the Pentagon was built in 1943. Originally, the building had a name as big as its footprint, the New Jersey State Lunatic Asylum at Morristown. But in 1924, it got renamed Greystone Park. Now it's known just as Greystone. And that's the name given to the facility by one of its most famous patients, folk singer Woody Guthrie. Back in the days of these incredibly huge mental hospitals, patients are frequently admitted for things we wouldn't call mental illness today. Now, Guthrie's a perfect example of that. He lived at Greystone from 1956 to 1961 because he was afflicted with Huntington's disease, which last time I knew was not a mental illness. Another famous musician, Bob Dylan, also spent some time there. Now, he's one that might meet the definition. As with many of the hospitals we've discussed, while Greystone Park was open, rumors of patient mistreatment and abuse surrounded it like a fog. Since it closed in 2003, these rumors have been replaced with stories of ghosts and hauntings. In Lost in Darkness, Benjamin Jeffries discussed the whispered stories about light anomalies, mysterious door and window openings and closings, and even sightings of the faces of former patients looking out of the windows. Paranormal romance author Denise Rago, who lives near Greystone, claims that grounds workers reported feeling watched while they work outside. Scott Hefner said he saw a full-body apparition in the old shower area in the basement when he visited. While he was on site photographing the abandoned building, he watched as a planter with fake flowers slowly twisted back and forth as being influenced by looming spirits. Now, this happened even though there was no discernible breeze and the windows were all boarded up. From New Jersey, we go to New York. Riverside Hospital on North Brother Island. Now, Typhoid Mary is a term often used to refer to the origin of an illness outbreak. My goodness, connections just opened up. For example, if somebody comes into your office coughing on Tuesday, by Friday, everybody who works there will be sick. You might call her Typhoid Mary. But the phrase Typhoid Mary originated with a real person, Mellie Malone, the first person ever to be called Typhoid Mary. She was also the first person in the U.S. to be identified as a symptomatic carrier of typhoid fever. And though she was immune to the disease and didn't exhibit any symptoms, she was still able to infect other people. Once they identified her as the source of several typhoid outbreaks, authorities attempted to talk Mary out of continuing to work as a cook in order to minimize the risk she posed, but she refused. Now, typhoid is mostly spread through fecal-oral transmission, so if Mary wasn't handling people's food, she'd be less likely to infect them. She infected, it's known, at least 53 people, three of whom died. In order to protect the public, she was quarantined in the Riverside Hospital until she died a number of years later. The hospital, and in fact the entire island, is widely thought to be haunted, but the specific form of the haunting is difficult somewhat to pin down. Maybe because the island has been largely abandoned for decades. Well, there are now plans to open up to the public, so that's going to change. And who knows what stories will begin to circulate once more people are able to visit the island. You know they're going to be ghost hunters all over the place. Well, we come to the end of another show. We'll be back and talk about more haunted locations tomorrow. But for now, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.